gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today, tonight, Horace Ford. He has spoken here several times before, and I'm sure some of you all know him. But I'll give you a little history. He was formerly with the Yale Plan on Alcoholism, and is now with the Ragey Foundation. He is Director for Education on Alcoholism. This is a Texas institution, which partly supports part of the support is given by the Ragey Foundation from royalty. That does not support it all, but part of it comes from that. Mr. Ford is the son of a minister. He also has a brother that is a minister. And I'm sure that you will be interested in what Mr. Ford has to say on alcohol.
Sam, Mayor, and Reverend Nichols, guests, AAs, and friends, my part on this program tonight is in the area of alcoholism, a disease, its nature and treatment. And I want to confine myself largely to that subject and see if I can in some way say something that be worthy of your attention. I think sometimes we give lip service to things and we intellectually accept statements, but we really down deep inside of us have some reservations. And I thought if I could concern myself with this one factor, and then the lady who's to follow me talking about her experience in recovery as a woman AA, and then the man talking about his experience, Scott, as I have known him over the years. And I am very, very grateful to have a chance to carry a word of hope, if I can say that way, to those who might still be sick and who haven't heard of how they can get well. And I know this message has to be carried by all of us. And for that reason, I think the non-alcoholic has a very vital part in the solution of this major public health and social problem. So vital is it for cooperation that I hope everyone in this room will leave here with a feeling that comes about because of a deep conviction that you do have something to do to help. I don't think we're ever going to solve a problem as complex and as big as alcoholism is until we can mobilize every ethical resource we have in our community and join hands. We may disagree on methods and plans, but we can all join hands on the rehabilitation of people who are sick. And I consider it an honor to be invited to be here with you. And I went out this evening and this afternoon and had a few minutes to visit in this new educational and recreational center the AAs have a few blocks out. And I saw a little more than an acre of ground, and I saw a nice, simple, constructed, and yet adequate clubhouse, a home where men and women could go as a haven of refuge to gain strength, to enjoy their sobriety. And seeing that view and seeing the possibilities of what could be done, and hearing an AA friend talk about their plan and how they could sit on that porch and do a little dreaming of how they could make this a great resource for good. Because AA is priceless to this community. as a resource. It's priceless because you can never measure its true value. One can never take an ad machine and put down 1, 2, 3, these are the results of AA. The best you can do is to say, this number were contacted, this many are sober. But if you actually could measure the true good, it would be much greater than anything that will take a tangible factor. I felt that if the citizens of Big Springs could go out there, say on a Saturday evening when they have their social and their little open meeting where the public is invited, I felt if the non-alcoholics in this town could go out and break bread with those people who have recovered their health and could sense the true value of what they had, could understand that all the AA wants from the community is understanding and goodwill, that they have nothing to sell, and AA never grows on the basis of promotion. I suppose it's the only fellowship in the world that relies entirely upon attraction rather than promotion for increasing its number. AA came into being only about 16 years ago, and the first 5 years in AA there was only 100 members. It was a struggle of people who were beaten down and people who had such a stigma over them that in order to survive they had to hold close to each other. And had there not been a stigma and misinformation and ignorance attached to the problem in the beginning, we wouldn't have had any AA. Because it was this very fact of having a stigma that forced the close fellowship of the alcoholics to realize they had to help each other, stay close to each other to survive. Now, we have 100 and about 40,000 men and women who've recovered their health in AA in this nation. And you could go to London tonight and probably attend an AA meeting. You could go to Oslo, Sweden. You could go to Paris, France. You could go to the occupied zone in Berlin. You could go to Okinawa. You could go to Tokyo. You could go to the English sector in Hong Kong. You could go to Rio de Janeiro. You could go to Chihuahua City, Mexico City. You could go to Brazil. You could go to about 50 different countries. And you'd find a group of people keeping well as a result of saying just what Sam said a while ago. There is nothing in the program to keep people from going and getting their health back if they can realize that in order to get well, they must seek help. Now, that's necessary. And for that reason, let me, in the few minutes I have, dwell on the importance of understanding why this is a disease. Now, I believe I would have been dead if I hadn't have had a great deal of help, a great deal of understanding why this was a disease. Because after I'd been in AA for a year or more, I still felt very guilty and very remorseful and felt that I deserved more punishment because of an unworthiness. And it was due to the fact that I could not, to save my soul, agree, even with the scientists and the ones who studied, that this was a disease. And finally, I asked a very wise man, a doctor named Dr. Lally, a sort of a medical saint, a man who loves alcoholics, who has examined 4,000 or more in the Yale Clinic in New Haven. And he saw back there in 45, when I was at the school, he saw me as one of about 8 AAs that year. And we were staying close together, and we were a little frightened about all of these other people who looked at us in a rather peculiar way. We felt like we were a little bit isolated. And some of the wise men up there sensed that, and they had us sandwiched around to eat with different peoples. And it wasn't very long till we saw that those men of medicine and science had taken the program of AA and put it on a very high pedestal. And that of all the 60 lectures on the subject, each time somebody said something good about this fellowship. As Scott was remarking to me a while ago, the mayor made a wonderful AA talk. You don't have to be an alcoholic to live this program by any means. Anyone can get value out of it. But for the alcoholic, these 200 or more words, about the equivalent of what you find in the Gettysburg Address, the Constitution, the simplicity was built on the principle that we were sick people. And if you can't understand the alcoholic as a person who is ill, then it's very, very difficult to understand AA for the simple reason the foundation stone of AA is the fact that this statement is in our book, which says we came to believe this was a disease. That the alcoholic suffered from an obsession of the mind coupled with an allergy of the body, period. And that definition would stand up under any scientific spotlight. It's good, it's simple, it's sound. That makes alcoholism a dual illness. And that's important to understand. Dr. Howard Haggard, one of the greatest authorities on the medical school at Yale University, who studied this for over 15 years, who would never make the statement I'm going to give you, he wouldn't risk his reputation if he couldn't back it up, if he didn't believe it, if he didn't know it. Here's a simple way he said, alcoholism is a disease because compulsive drinking is a disease. The only form of drinking that is a disease. Compulsive drinking is a disease. Compulsive drinking is alcoholism. For that reason, we must not get voluntary drunkenness mixed up with compulsive drinking. The alcoholic drank under a compulsion. And what is a compulsion? I'm going to take you to another expert by the name of Dr. Thibault, one of the 10 top white psychiatrists in the country, and a man who fought the battle of AA in the beginning to get the medical society to understand that we weren't a group of charlatans, that we weren't a group of superstitious people, that AA was a logical, practical, workable plan for meeting a social addiction such as alcohol. What did he say a compulsion was? A compulsion, he said, is a name we give to a condition. It is the accumulation of tension that causes a person to do something against their judgment, against their common sense, against things that are right. He does it in the face of danger. He has a compulsion. That is what AA treats. AA treats the mental attitude. AA is a way of life. It is the most effective treatment that has been found. But it is a treatment. And what I hope to do now is to do a little teaching, if you'll forgive me for the expression. Because that's about all I know. From the time I graduated from SMU back in 24, I went to teaching. And I was principal of a high school a while. And I didn't know much to do. And when I developed the disease of alcoholism, I was like a fish out of water. I had no track. I couldn't go back to teaching. No, people didn't look upon alcoholism as disease. I shall always remember as soon as I resigned from the principalship of a big high school in El Paso, that night they had the Chamber of Commerce and the PTA and the student body in a mass meeting with some 1,000 of people asking me if I wouldn't remain as principal. And I was having to sit on my hands to keep them from shaking off, waiting for them to leave so I could go to my office to take a drink. Take a drink. Take a drink of what? Alcohol. Why alcohol? Because alcohol as a sedative reduced my tension. And the alcoholic suffers from chronic tension as long as he lives. He's got to have a way to reduce those tensions, but he cannot use alcohol because alcohol to the alcoholic means poison. He used it as a medicine. It did a job for him. Most alcoholics never went through much of a social drinking spirit. Many got drunk the first time they drank. There has never been a scientific group that yet can say what is the cause, and no reliable authority will tell you there is a cure. Alcohol has no germ. You come with me to the city ward at Bellevue, if you wish, in New York, or Knickerbocker. You look at a man who's sobering up, an alcoholic. You look at those trembling hands. You look at those bloodshot eyes and that bloated face. You look at a man suffering from malnutrition and lack of vitamins and minerals and calcium. You look at a man who is dependent upon alcohol for existence. See that man with cold sweat. Walk in on him at night and see him crying and praying for forgiveness and yet unable to feel forgiven. Look at him in all of the complete deterioration, sick mentally, morally, spiritually. Now, he says, if you can't believe it's a disease, you certainly will say that man is sick. So let's start there. The alcoholic is a sick person who can be helped, who is worth helping. And you'll know what I mean when you say he can be helped, because you're going to hear two people who will form and give human documentation to that statement. Their lives are a living testimony that the alcoholic can be helped and is worth helping. Now, why is it important for you to understand this is a disease? Well, a lot of reasons. First, it's necessary for the alcoholic to understand it so he can forgive himself. We must remember that a disease is no respecter of people. And alcoholism has the characteristics of a disease in that respect. It's no respecter of race, creed, color, an economic or a social status. No disease is. And a man can die from a minor illness if he has no will to live. And many alcoholics reach the point where they had no motive back of even making an effort. It's necessary for him to, or her, to realize that the only basis of me, say in my own life, of forgiving myself is on the basis that I was sick, and that my behavior while I was drunk was a symptom of my disease, just like the rash is a symptom of measles. Now, you don't treat the rash. There's no use to treat a fever or a symptom. You might run it down with aspirin, but we have to go to the source of an infection. And we have 200,000 men and women at a ratio of 5 to 1, 5 men to 1 woman, in this state alone, who are tonight being incapacitated, being drawn out of their useful place in society by this disease. And not only are they being damaged, but they are pulling down with them on an average of 20 other people, including their loved ones. You can have cancer and die from cancer, and you alone will be the one that will suffer. Your loved ones won't suffer. They won't have remorse. They won't stay in a pillow at night with tears of remorse and regret and fear. They accept the fact this is a disease. This is an illness. Now, the diabetic. This poor diabetic, he's told by some doctors, he's told in a very reliable manner that he has a condition in which there is no germ and no virus, and you can't take a microscopic slide of any section of his body and show anything in the way of a germ. Diabetes doesn't have a germ. Neither does alcoholism. But no one would question a diabetic being sick. If you do, you should do like I said once in New York and go to that great diabetic hospital and see those many, many men and women with their legs cut off and their arms removed because they let untreated diabetics go so far in their life till they lost control and had to have amputations. Or, if you don't believe that you can compare them, let's look at the diabetic craving for sugar, whose system won't burn it, who has to have insulin to get by, or a diet that's rigid. Now, suppose this diabetic is told by his doctors and loved ones and friends and his family that if he goes out and eats sweets, that he'll go into a diabetic coma, and it's possible that he would die, and that he will cause a great deal of trouble, and that he mustn't eat sweets. Now, suppose the guy does, and many of them do, he slips out one night. He goes down to a little corner cafe. It stays open all night. He goes in there and slips off from the family and eats a big slice of apple pie and puts a lot of sugar in his coffee. And he goes home. And in a little while, he goes in a diabetic coma. And the wife and loved ones call the doctor. And the doctor can't get there too fast. And he'll call an ambulance. And they'll get the man in the hospital. The man did just exactly what that alcoholic does when he went after alcohol, when he knew what it would do. The obsession, so powerful, to use a substance which, if he uses it, means drunkenness. And the greatest danger of drinking is drunkenness. And when the alcoholic drinks, he gets drunk. And that's a matter of body chemistry and not weakness. If we could convince everyone in this room that this was a disease, and you really believed it in your heart, down into your bones, that this was a disease, did you know that in the next 24 hours there'd be at least 10 persons in this town who would seek treatment? I owe my life to a non-alcoholic, who's now a woman who is now my wife. A person who had not. That is the answer to most of our problems. Do you realize how many wives of AA's are here? If it wasn't a public meeting, I'd ask them to stand. Women who have been so filled with fears, and some tonight still frightened at the fact that that loved one might return, might slip out, might eat some pie. No. The greatest thing we can do for the alcoholic is to help him have faith in the treatment he is taking, to give him hope that good things will come about. But let him believe, as our mayor says, that true reality is those things that can't be taken away from us, and they're things of the spirit, not material. We don't have any people having trouble in AA when they get it clear in their minds that they're ill, because it's a mark of normality if you're sick to go get well. It's a badge of maturity if you're sick to get the best treatment you can get. But any man who takes a treatment for an illness he has on the basis of his love for his wife or child, the man who goes to a treatment on the basis of his love for someone else and not because he believes he's sick, that man has trouble. Because you get well for your own sake. A hospital is for sick people. We're having a few hospitals that'll take alcoholics now. We have some good hospitals and rest homes for them. But you'd be surprised how many hospitals still say, we cannot take a man who has alcohol in his breath. And some of them have died right in the corridors of hospitals because they were judged on their behavior while drinking and not upon their true condition. They were treated for symptoms. We would never have had an AA program if this was not a disease. There would be no AA tonight, no 100 groups in this state, no 5,000 recoveries in this state in the last 7 years. There would be none if AA was just a place to get sober. 100 people start drinking. 6 of those 100, 6%, will get a great reward from alcohol. It will do something for that shine, its timidity. It will do something that will help them reduce their tensions, anxieties, and frustrations. It will make them someone else, and they don't like themselves sober. And they get out of alcohol a medicine. And those 6 will go on through a process, and they'll have symptoms, and they'll hide the bottle, and they'll feel ashamed, and they'll gulp their drinks, and they'll begin to guard their supply. And they'll begin to choose gatherings where alcohol is plentiful. And that will be the only basis of the meeting. They will begin to sacrifice true values. They'll build an alibi system up to convince themselves why they should be treated different than anybody in the world and why they someday would quit. And during this time, they're building a shell about a foot thick around their life. And this shell is a shell of loneliness and despair and self-judgment until finally the alcoholic withdraws from the community of good. He feels he is unworthy of citizenship in his home, community, or in the kingdom of God. And he feels desperate, but he dares not let a single soul know. He will fight to the last. He'll become angry and criticize anyone, regardless of their intentions, who says, why don't you let up on it? Why don't you quit? Quit if they only knew. And the loved one who cried, the mother who cried, they wonder in despair why their love and affection won't get him well. And they forget that they wouldn't even think of praying for him if his nose was running or asking God why their love didn't stop his bad cough. We must realize then that this disease is something that is very complex, and every alcoholic is a personalized victim. There's no set pattern of symptoms. We know that if this man is going to get well, he's going to have to reach bottom. And you might ask tonight, what part can I play in helping that man want to get well? And I offer these suggestions. First, buy you an AA book at a bookstore, Alcoholics Anonymous. Read the 25 or 30 illustrations of men's lives in every vocation, including chapters for the wives and employers and others. Read about this 12 steps, the way of living, this philosophy of life, this blueprint, this staying sober 24 hours. Read, study the program. Get pamphlets. If you go out tonight to the club room out there that they want you to visit them, pick up some of those AA pamphlets they have there if you're interested. You may say, well, I don't have anyone I know who's an alcoholic. Therefore, why should I be concerned? Why should you be concerned? We have a disease that's rating number 3 and 2 in America. We have a disease affecting 4 million. We have a disease out of control. We have a disease cutting deep and affecting seriously the lives of 4 million times 20. We have a disease that last year, untreated alcoholism, cost America $1,400,000,000. Untreated alcoholism. Do you realize that the alcoholic has twice the accident rate? I talked to the head of a big refinery once in Beaumont. He said, it was closing a month, he's looking at his absenteeism. I said, do you have any alcoholism? He says, no. We have a very strict rule. No man enters this plant with alcohol in his breath. And I thought, my gracious. Don't they understand that the drunkenness is a symptom, that you can have a first case of alcoholism without any alcohol? Your thinking can be so messed up. You have to think a drink before you can take it, because you can't go to bed sober and wake up. I'll go to bed sober and wake up drunk. You just don't. This obsession to use this substance can be controlled and held under as a ball is held under water, but you sure can't erase it and eradicate it completely. Not at all. We can control it. And although I haven't had anything to drink in 8 years, for 9.5 years and 11.5 months of hospitalization and every form of treatment known, and I made a terrific sacrifice of the finest fixed loyalties a man could sacrifice. If you don't believe it's a disease, do you believe that the way I was brought up and the opportunities I had at 29, principal one of our largest high schools on a good salary, directing the young people's work in a church and a class and a luncheon club and a good credit standing, and I set up and sacrificed the affection of two children until they had to leave and took stepfather's name, my credit, all of my training. I put it on the altar of alcohol and I became a slave. It shouldn't be difficult for an alcoholic to realize he's powerless over a substance, over something greater than he is. I was powerless over a power known as alcohol. My God was a bottle with a stopper in his neck. There was the power. What is it that keeps me from taking a drink today? Is it knowledge and facts and information I've gathered and gleaned? No. The only insurance the alcoholic has against that first drink, because he can't take a drink, he can take a drunk, but he can't take a drink. As long as he lives, he can never drink with safety. And is that bad? Heck no. It's good. I am not handicapped the fact that my body chemistry makes me allergic to a substance. I've heard people say, well, my goodness alive, how could they be allergic to a stimulant? And I said, well, at first, it's not a stimulant. Alcohol is the first cousin of ether. It's a great tension-reducing device. And we are tense people. And we used it for a purpose. But we were allergic to it, and to drink was to die. But we had heard all of our lives that a man, if he had willpower, could control it, and therefore we nearly died, except for the grace of God, in trying to be what other people said who were poorly informed. So if the non-alcoholic can get this alcoholic to believe and to understand that he's sick, and it doesn't do any good to tell him he's sick if you're going to treat him as if he was willfully suffering from a bad habit. It doesn't do any good to say to your husband as you look at him, well, look at you. You promised me you'd never be this way again. I could see my brother. He can take one drink. Look at you, you lousy thing. I'm going home to mother. My God, why do you make the sacrifice? Bang, bang, bang. How in the world do you think those words feel to a poor, raw nervous system and a bloated face, and you inside have already called yourself worse than anything anybody else can call it? Just remember that. Yours is a sissy accusation. What does that man need? Well, first place, we're a kindly people. And our attitude toward anyone who's sick is to try to be helpful. Therefore, let's be understanding and believe that he's sick and see what happens. Can you get another person to talk to him about a third party? Be careful and not bruise the fruit, because this shell that he has housed himself in, you can't break it with a sledgehammer. Or you might even break the very capacity for his recovery, which lies deep inside that natural God-given endowment that man's incurable religious and will have to worship something. You have to create a God he doesn't have. I believe so firmly tonight, as I never believed before, that the AA who's living this program is the most normal person I know. It's not a program of abnormality. 30% of the alcoholics have no neurotic condition, nothing in their makeup to justify saying they've got an ailment for which they're not responsible. Many, many people say that no one is free of the danger of a substance if they constantly expose themselves to it. So the non-alcoholic can give hope first. If the man goes to AA, always mention your faith in the program working, but for goodness sake, don't mention people. Don't compare. Just say, if you're a wife, this thing is good. I've read it. I'm powerless over a few things myself. I'm going 24 hours without gossiping. I know you can go 24 hours and be sober, because that's all an alcoholic should try to be sober one day at a time. So the non-alcoholic has got a great something to give. Could you get the man to ever be willing to talk to another man who's gotten well? If he ever goes that far, 50% of the battle's won. But sometimes loved ones are so emotionally close to the ones that are sick that they can't help them. And it often takes a man who's gotten well to quietly break that shell. And this man can peep out. And for the first time in his life, he knows he'll never be alone again, because here is another. Here is a person I can be truthful to for the first time in my life. I no longer have to lie. So, he reaches bottom one day, and what is bottom? Does that mean he has to go to jail? No. Does it mean that he has to lose everything he's got? No. Not at all. A man reaches bottom when he sincerely and honestly says to himself or others, I cannot do this alone. I need help. That's bottom. I don't care if he's in a penthouse or a flop house. That's bottom. And most of the alcoholics in the AA today are men and women who have preserved their home. They're your next door neighbors. They're not a guy needing a shave, or not a, many of them in the front lawn. Just an average guy, sick. Terribly sick. So the only thing then that I can leave with you is that it has the characteristics of a disease. All of medical science has studied says the alcoholic has to have something to reduce his tensions, and he can't use alcohol. So what can he do? Well, he can use the greatest tension-reducing device in the world that was once given by a scientist and not a minister. The greatest tension-reducing device in the world for anyone is, as he said, faith in the living God. And when the Secretary of War dedicated your veterans' hospitals here in Big Springs, when he dedicated, I read the Associated Press somewhere in some other city, his state, and his state. He said, with all of this beautiful building, with all this equipment, and all of these fine instruments, and with all of this trained personnel, and doctors and nurses, we can do nothing to help this man get well without the help of God. The president of the Marsh Plan Bank of America, sent to the mountains to die from TB, said, I came out and lived. And when I did, I found a reason to live. There was a new something. What was it? Well, he said, it's pretty simple. It's pretty important to be born again. The alcoholic can find in AA every single thing that is prescribed as an essential in the treatment of any addiction. If he wants it, if he can believe in his heart he's sick, then he will know that if you're sick and you go for help, it's not a mark of weakness, it's a mark of good judgment. And if a non-alcoholic will understand, he'll convalesce and get well gradually and be patient and have faith in the program and not reflect fear, then that loved one will make. He may stumble, and he fall many times. But don't ever put in your vocabulary, as long as you live, that the alcoholic is hopeless, because there isn't any such word in our spiritual vocabulary. I believe that. Or else I wouldn't be living here. I wouldn't be alive. I wouldn't be leaving tonight to go to El Paso to talk to the penitentiary AA group. And he asked me to go. I wouldn't go 500 miles. Go way out there, come back. Why am I going? You say to serve? Not altogether. I'm pretty selfish. I've got to go be with other people as they're getting well, or else I'll lose my gratitude and forget that at one time my hand trembled, my eyes were bloodshot, my face blood. Now, I don't want to do that. In order not to return, I've got to bear in mind all the time, my treatment must be constant, must be regular. What is my treatment? The best I know. Am I proud of being an alcoholic? No. No more than I'm proud of having TB if I had it. Am I sorry that this story of mine and their suffering? Sure. Do I cry over it? No. Why? Because this morbid story that once kept me awake all night, struck, drink. That story now is almost sacred. And if I'll keep my own household in order, that story can save a guy's life. Because I'll be an instrument for carrying on to him sometime home. So I go to the penitentiary to keep my health. If I happen to help somebody, well and good. No, I don't believe we can be a passive attitude. Climb up on a hill, put a curtain around us and say, oh yes, I'll stay away. Oh, I love AA because we believe we should go to any place, no matter how dirty, filthy it is. We should go anywhere that there's a filth alcoholic. And we should never rest and never leave AA until everyone has had a chance to know what's wrong and how they can get well. And I thank God for non-alcoholics and the people that have come here to join hands with this local group to help build this fine resource for good. And this minister who prayed, the mayor who said Christ would come here and sit with us and break bread with us. I'm grateful for a mayor of a city. I'm grateful for what Secretary of Ward Gray said here. I'm grateful to see some mothers here who've seen sons get well because mine died screaming about me. I'm glad to see some children here whose homes have been preserved. If for no other reason but the children of America and the alcoholics home, for their sake, rehabilitation is important. And don't forget that diseases need prevention and that our young people have got to have an opportunity to know this disease is simple. If we neglect doing that, we cannot be held guilty. When there was going to be a reckoning of whether we took our responsibility and handled it manfully, or did we take our knowledge and dissipate it and prostitute it into wrong channels. If you found out something tonight that makes you want to do something about this problem, for God's sakes, remember E. Stanley Jones when he said, inspiration without expression will lead to a depression. And as Dr. Lee of SMU once said, you may disagree on how a person became an alcoholic, but you can never, never, he said, get into your head the idea that we can all join hands on helping him get well, even though we might disagree on why. So, since I monopolized some of the time of the speakers, which I regret, but I just couldn't stop. And I wanted so badly. And I stood 4 hours, something I seldom do, in a room today, trying to get a feeling inside of me, did I have anything to give? Was I giving something that was old and boring? And then I knew that I had nothing to give unless I had the help of someone bigger than myself. And I felt like I had that when Sam and the mayor and when Reverend Nichols gave the invitation. I felt like there was an atmosphere, and I see in your faces interest. I see a big family here whom I believe will give their best attention as they hear the stories to follow. And I hope Scott and the lady will forgive me. They can get even with me again sometime. But if you possibly can, give understanding and goodwill to the Big Springs AA group that they might grow in strength and wisdom and help somebody that would die if they went there. And you good wives, stay with your husband. Have faith. We need right now to have faith in faith. A great deal. And this program stood for all. Thank you very much.